Welcome to the Drive Time Show on Toledo Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Crowd urging Miguel to deliver a big hit here in the fifth. Conley sets the 3-2. Swinging a fly ball left field. Way back in left and gone. Three-run shot for Cabrera, and the Tigers take the lead.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports exclusive is driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik Jr., at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Here we go. Snap. Spot. Kick on the way. It's no good. It's no good. It's no good. And it's over. The Lions have won it for the first time since 1991. They come to Green Bay and post an improbable victory.
Get ready. It's now drive time.
Barrett quickly in the shotgun gets the snap. No, Barrett keeps it and goes in for the left for the touchdown. JT Barrett, as he faked it and on a five-yard run, curled around to the left and gives Ohio State lead on the touchdown run.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Curry blocks the shot. Sent Gretzky in. 3-0 Los Angeles. Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it. DeMarco, 15 feet, 4 inches, center of the cup, President's Cup to the United States.
All right, everybody, how are you? Another edition of Drive Time. My name's Mike Miller, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, coming to you tonight for the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore, the mothership, the home of Drive Time, of course, driven again by the low payment king, Ralph Mahalik. Got some new deals to announce throughout the show tonight. Boy, what a weekend of sports. I can tell you that Nick Piotrowicz will join us at 5:15 tonight. He was in State College, Pennsylvania. He wrote about and he witnessed Penn State's win over the Ohio State Buckeyes. We'll be talking Buckeyes football. Bulls to number two. Then at 5:35 tonight, Craig Muter will join us. National Baseball Museum, a.k.a. that is Cooperstown, the Hall of Fame. He'll join us tonight about 5:35. Talk about the Hall of Fame. You're talking about history. Historic matchup. Cleveland Indians, Chicago Cubs. That gets underway Tuesday night in Cleveland. How about this for a night in Cleveland on Tuesday? The Cleveland Indians, who, by the way, played in the World Series in 1997, but have not won since 1948. The Cavaliers on Tuesday night are raising their championship banners up into the arena that night as well. What a night for Cleveland. I'll say it this way, the much maligned Cleveland at times, and all of a sudden they become the center of the universe in sports over the last year or so. So it's going to be a great World Series. Kind of surprised me, the guys in Las Vegas today had the Chicago Cubs at minus 185. And what that means is if you wanted to win $100 on the Chicago Cubs, you'd have to bet 185. What that means, they have the Cubs as almost a 2-to-1 favorite in this thing. Very, very important that the Cleveland Indians get off to a good start with Corey Kluber in Game 1 against John Lester, because I think, obviously, with the Cleveland pitching staff banged up a little bit, you get to Andrew Miller, and, of course, you get to Allen, and the starting pitching I give to the Cubs, the relief pitching, of course, you give to the Cleveland Indians. But Game 1, listen, all Game 1s are crucial, but I think in this case crucial for the Cleveland Indians. Back to the Buckeyes here briefly, and I don't want this to sound like sour grapes. And, of course, this is an Ohio State-affiliated station. We also, of course, on Nash 98, carry the University of Michigan Wolverines. Ohio State with a block punt. Ohio State with a block field goal. Listen, their special teams lost that game. By the way, their receivers right now only averaging 9 yards per catch. The offensive line has not been good for the Ohio State Buckeyes. But I look at it this way. If you're an Ohio State fan right now, you got the maize and blue pom-poms out. You are rooting for the University of Michigan to absolutely blow away the field here coming down the stretch. And also what you're hoping for is that Alabama loses. And they got number 19 LSU. They got Chattanooga. We won't even count that. They're 5-1. That's in the Southern Conference. Of course, a conference that features people like the Citadel, Samford, and VMI. But they also got Auburn at number 15. They got Mississippi State, who's struggling in the SEC. They're 2-5. So the perfect storm, if you're an Ohio State fan, is Michigan routes everybody up until the Ohio State game. Alabama gets beat. Michigan moves into the number one slot. Then the Ohio State Buckeyes take on Michigan on November 26th. You win that game, and Ohio State's probably playing for a national championship again with a very young team. And that wouldn't eliminate Michigan either. So very, very interesting. And just an observation here. Only because, and I don't like making this about myself, but I think over the years people get to know who you are. I was a college official, not in football. I was a baseball umpire, and I said one thing, that as an official at the college level, you never want to be involved in a play that decides a game. This is not sour grapes, but I watch ticky-tack fouls and penalties being called during the course of a football game just for a little grab here, a little hold here, you know, and all of a sudden there's flags everywhere. Well, I got to tell you, if that's not pass interference for the Ohio State Buckeyes, when you have a guy that trains to be a great athlete like JT Barrett and throws a perfect pass down the left sideline to get the Buckeyes in the field goal range, tying field goal range to send the thing into overtime, the pass was so good it hit the Ohio State receiver right in the face mask. And lo and behold, the Penn State defender has the other guy's arm, and he's holding it. This isn't an Ohio State sour grape statement. But if I'm an official, that's the biggest call of a game. It might have repercussions on a national championship. As an official, you want to make the right call there. And even Chris Fowler, who was doing the play-by-play for ABC, said, you know, something. They didn't even touch on this. To me, it was a huge play. Ohio State got what they deserved. Their special teams were not good. They put themselves in that situation. They had that game in hand, a block punt and a block field goal. But for crying out loud, give them some credit for battling back and making the play they had to make, and the official basically took it from them. You can't, listen, there's receivers that make great catches with one hand and one arm. This was a two-handed pass. Or a one-handed pass from Barrett and a two-handed catch from the receiver if Penn State doesn't have the receiver's arm. Should have been a flag, no doubt about it whatsoever. But I'm sure Urban Meyer has moved on from this. By the way, coming back from Columbus today, he spent time with the coach, is our 5:15 guest, Nick Piotrowicz, and he'll see with us and talk about what he heard today down in Columbus as well. Lions, isn't it odd on a weekend where we're saying the Ohio State Buckeyes always find a way to win and the Detroit Lions always find a way to lose? The exact opposite this weekend. The Ohio State Buckeyes found a way to lose, and the Detroit Lions, for the third consecutive weekend, find a way to pull a game out late. I mean, what's the Seinfeld episode? The opposite episode with George Costanza there. Everything's been turned upside down. Buckeyes find a way to lose, and the Detroit Lions now for the third straight week have found a way to win. How about Matt Stafford? You don't think he's going to cash in. He's only 29 years of age. He's a guy that's been under a ton of heat. Either liked him as a Lion fan or you didn't like him. He's been absolutely, he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league since about game four last year. His contract through 2017 is $78 million. Only $41 million of that's guaranteed. Somebody's going to pay, and I'm kind of wondering whether it's going to be the Lions or not. Red Wings have won four consecutive games, by the way. They seem to have things straightened around. Joey Logano wins on the NASCAR circuit, so a lot of good things. The Rockets win over Central Michigan University. Crazy things going on at Bowling Green. They lost this weekend. Michigan rolls over Illinois by a count of 41-8. World Series coming up, and the two teams combined have not won a World Series in 176 years. So good for the Cub fans, good for the Indian fans. That gets underway, of course, on Tuesday. This is Drive Time. It's driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mihalik, everybody. How about this deal? A 2016 Dodge Challenger SXT. $99 a month, 24-month lease. Visit themonroesuperstore.com. Better yet, come up and see some of the great sales associates here at the Superstore. Back with Nick Piotrowicz after this, talking Buckeyes. This is Drive Time, and this is ESPN Radio.
Local sports. It's Drive Time on Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. My name is Mike Miller. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, coming to you from the mothership up at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Craig Muter will join us. National Museum of Baseball, a.k.a. the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. He joins us at 5:35, 5:40 tonight. Historic indeed. The Indians and, of course, the Chicago Cubs, as I just mentioned, neither of those teams have won a World Series in 176 years combined. Cleveland in 1948. No, I wasn't living then. And the Chicago Cubs in 1908. Certainly wasn't living then as well. Glad to have you on board. We touched Buckeyes. We touched Lions. We touched World Series. Gave you a little recap of the commentary tonight. Went over everything. And we're going to divulge into this a little bit deeper. Haven't talked to this guy in a long time. I don't know why we should do it more, but Nick Piotrowicz joins us. He's the beat writer, of course, for the Toledo Blade. He was in University Park, State College, Pennsylvania, and watched that upset, of course, as Penn State beat the Ohio State Buckeyes, who have dropped to 6 in the polls by a score of 24-21. Just back from Columbus. I'm sure he heard some interesting things today from Urban Meyer. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hey, Mike. What's going on?
Well, listen, number one, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it. Back from Columbus, I take it. Well, first things first, what did you hear down there? What are they saying in Columbus?
Well, the overarching takeaway is that Ohio State really doesn't plan any major changes. Last time they lost a game was Michigan State last year, and they made some big changes with the way they called plays. They put co-offensive coordinators Tim Beck and Ed Warner in the press box. There's really nothing like that going on here. They really struggled on the offensive line against Penn State. The play calling was on some fans' nerves, but Urban Meyer said pretty much they're going to hang with what they do. He said he was okay with the play calling. He said the offensive line isn't going to have any personnel changes. And JT Barrett said that he doesn't really have any intention to force anything. Or he's going to take what the defense gives him. So he isn't really looking to make any huge changes in the passing game. They're content that they will be fine with what they have. They just need to be doing it at a higher level.
You know, I said this a little bit earlier. If you're an Ohio State fan, Nick, here's what you're hoping for. Number one, for Michigan to run the table up until the Ohio State game, blow everybody out. Alabama gets beat by LSU or, who knows, possibly Auburn. Mississippi State, I don't think, has got a chance to do that. Certainly not Chattanooga. And Michigan moves into the number one slot in the AP poll, and maybe into the thoughts of the people and the bowl committee. Then Ohio State down in Columbus, they roll over Michigan, and Ohio State's right back in the middle of this national championship thing. So as tough as the loss was, certainly a long way from being over.
For sure. And the interesting thing about this, Florida during the 2006 season, Florida during the 2008 season, and then Ohio State during the 2014 season, all lost as a favorite and all went on to win the national championship. All three of Urban Meyer's national champion teams took a loss in the regular season. So by no means is this over. If they run the table here and beat Michigan, they are right where they want to be. But, of course, the margin for error now is much, much smaller than what it was before Saturday.
Hey, Nick, listen, you talked about JT Barrett. You talked about the play calling. There's not going to be a lot of changes. I'll guarantee you something that was discussed this week, of course, you know, was the special teams. That was the real bugaboo in this thing. I was broadcasting a hockey game in Canada, and I was able to pick the ticket up. I was very happy with our signal on Saturday night. I was able to catch the fourth quarter driving home, and it sounded like, you know, Ohio State had things well in hand and were cruising, and all of a sudden a block punt and a block field goal. So special teams, was that addressed today, and can you fill us in, Nick Piotrowicz, if anything was discussed with the media along those lines?
Yeah, Meyer said he's going to take a bigger look into it later this week, but almost every individual special team had some sort of a problem at Penn State. Obviously the punt was blocked, obviously the kick was blocked, but Dontre Wilson is continuing to have trouble fielding punts. He dropped one, and Ohio State was lucky that Garyon Conley was there to pounce on it. So almost all the way down the line, they had problems during special teams. And then, of course, before the field goal, they had a bad snap that led to a missed extra point, which, came to bite them. And the thing that was not asked, unfortunately, on the field goal that decided it, that was blocked by Penn State, Ohio State was still rushing linemen onto the field with 7 seconds left on the play clock. Meyer didn't call timeout, said that Durbin, you know, he was confident from that distance, but the timing of it felt rushed. And I was wondering live and still now if that had some sort of effect on the play.
I agree with you. Listen, you talk to anybody in special teams, whether it's especially the kicker and the holder and anybody else, timing is everything in it. It's like hitting a golf ball. I mean, this has got to be bang, 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 repetition. You do it the same way every time. No doubt about it. I was going to ask you about that as well. Something else, Nick, I was going to ask you about, and I did make it home and pulled in and got to watch the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game. And listen, I don't want this to sound like sour grapes, okay? And I'm not sure it even came up today because that's the way it would sound. And again, I got to share this with my listeners just to validate where I'm coming from. I was a college official, not in football, but in baseball. I worked a College World Series, a Division II College World Series, and this is years ago. But as an official, and to be honest with you, I thought I was a pretty good one, the last thing I ever wanted to do was be involved in a play that decided a game. And if I had to make a call, I wanted it to be the right call. But I'm still irritated on this pass from JT Barrett down the left sideline that the pass was so good. Who was the receiver? Would hit the receiver right in the face mask, for crying out loud. And the Penn State defender grabs his arm and pulls it away. With two hands, he probably catches that ball. And Ohio State's got a first down on the 20-yard. My point of this thing is, listen, I'm not complaining because Ohio State lost. I'm complaining because a good official, you know, that's a call where he basically is impacting a possible national champion. And from an official's pride side of things, you want to make the right call there. This, to me, was such a blatant. This is why the rule pass interference was written. Guy holding on to a guy's arm when he's trying to catch a football. Have you heard anything in this, or has anybody said anything in this? Chris Fowler on the ABC feed didn't even say anything about it. I was a little surprised this hasn't been a bigger point of contention.
No, and Meyer wouldn't blame that, but it was to James Clark down the left sideline, and it was such a, you're hit it right on the head, it was such a perfect pass that it hit him right in the face mask. It was pretty clearly pass interference, and if he does catch that ball, there's a chance it's a touchdown, it's game over. But still looking at it from Ohio State's point of view, you're up 14-0, or excuse me, you're up 14 points in the fourth quarter. You have to get that to the barn, and they did not, with some pretty bad mistakes. So Meyer wasn't really dwelling on the penalty, even though it pretty obviously was pass interference.
I'll guarantee you, Sunday in his living room, he won't say it to you guys, Nick. I get that, and he's not going to say it publicly. I get all that. But I'll guarantee you, Sunday morning, drinking his coffee in the confines of his dining room at home, saw that. He said, for crying out loud, you got to call that. I mean, that, to me, getting back to my point, and I'm done with it, too big of a spot for an official to miss a call like that. And you can't dwell on it. I get that. Hey, moving forward on this thing, again, Nick Piotrowicz joins us, Toledo Blade beat writer. He covers the Ohio State Buckeyes, covered the University of Toledo Rockets for many years as well. Buckeyes, Nick, fall from 2-6. Does that slot right now, is that where you thought they would probably be after a loss like that?
Yeah, to be honest with you, they were a little higher than I thought they were going to be. I thought they were probably going to fall to 7 or 8. But you look at the way it's falling out this year, there's just really, there really wasn't any, you know, better place to put them. And it could have been much worse. There are years when you have a few different conferences that are looking like they're going to have an undefeated champion, and this type of loss to an unranked team can really knock you out of it. All in all told, it really isn't that huge of a deal for Ohio State. They still were going to have to beat Michigan. They still were going to have to win the Big Ten championship anyway. And they're sixth, and then there's a bunch of big games going on in the top 25 this weekend where some really good teams are on the road and against other ranked teams. And Ohio State has a relatively tamer game against Northwestern at home. So they're really one good week away from being right back in the top four.
Hey, you know what, Nick, too, you look at the schedule before I let you go here. Again, thanks for taking the time. Great to hear your voice. We got to do this again more often down the stretch here. But you mentioned Northwestern. Tell me a little bit about them going into the game on Saturday down in Columbus. And before you do that, listen, Nebraska's playing pretty well. Maryland's getting better. Michigan State's been awful. But if any team over the years, he's given Urban Meyer now 2 of his 5 losses. That's up in East Lansing. And a win there would make, believe me, would make their season. Michigan State, of course, already is going to play Michigan prior to that. Then the game on the 26th. So the schedule, there's going to be some tests down the road for a young Buckeye team. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. Tell me a little bit about Northwestern on Saturday. What do you see?
Northwestern, to me, is the hardest team in the Big Ten to figure out. I kind of have a sense of every team, of other teams' capability. Northwestern, to me, is the dark horse. Because at the beginning of the season, they looked really poor. They looked like they weren't going to be able to score 17 points on anybody. And then have really, really gotten better on the back of a solid defense and an improved quarterback. Meyer said today that he couldn't remember maybe ever a team that has improved this much from the beginning of the season until now. But Ohio State does get them at home. Northwestern hasn't won in Columbus since 1971. So they have a tall task. But they do have another solid defense. This game could take another type of tone that it did in against Indiana, where Indiana hung in that for a long time, and then Ohio State was able to push past in the fourth quarter. But if Ohio State can make this a tempo game where they can play quickly and they can establish its passing game, there's just a certain offensive breaking point for Northwestern. If Ohio State can get to, you know, 24, 27, 30 points, Northwestern's going to have a really tough time matching that against Ohio State's defense, of course, assuming that Ohio State isn't helping them out with turnovers.
Well, Nick, I'm going to let you go. You've seen some pretty neat venues in your new beat here. Camp Randall, Madison, of course, and at Penn State last weekend. Boy, talk about a couple of places with some great atmospheres, huh?
Yeah, it's no atmosphere is quite as good as Ypsilanti, Michigan, but in the MAC, but these two have been pretty good.
Listen, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. I might call on you again. Glad you made it back. And as Nick told me earlier today, he spends more time in Columbus than he does his hometown here at Toledo. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate you coming on.
Okay, Mike. See ya.
Nick Piotrowicz, beat writer, Toledo Blade, was... You know, they say University Park, Pennsylvania, State College, Pennsylvania. I'm not quite sure. That was his byline today. Maybe he was in a, who knows, writing from his hotel room for Monday's edition. It was in University Park, Pennsylvania. I think it's State College, Pennsylvania, where the actual stadium is. Regardless, that's something I'll Google a little bit later tonight. Hey, just a couple of notes here. On November the 12th, that's a Saturday, if you've been thinking about getting one of your kids involved in hockey, how about this? Come and try hockey for free. That's on Saturday, November the 12th, right up here at the Monroe Multi-Sports Complex. Come on up. Come play youth hockey and experience more great moments in your child's life. Come on up here. Here's your chance to see if there's an enjoyment level, and that's a USA hockey program. Get up here to the Monroe Multisports Complex. Play hockey for free that day as well. Hey, TAS Electronics, little update coming up on sports and weather with Jim. Remote car starter season is here. Toledo's remote car starter experts, that is TAS Electronics. See them today at any of their locations, McCord, north of Airport Highway, and Monroe, and Whiteford, TAS1.com. TAS1.com. Again, that's remote car starter season. Listen, I told this story numerous times. I took over the garage at the Meller Estate. How do you like that? So everybody else that's hanging around, just because I'm, you know, I got to get in there and keep that radio equipment warm if I'm traveling. That was my excuse anyways. But I was good enough, of course, to go out and buy everybody else a remote car starter. They bought that whole scam. It's unbelievable, but they love them, and I got them at TAS. They've been very, very dependable, reliable, and they work great. Hey, just another quick note, Jim, and please correct me if this is still going on. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket has a chance for you to attend the 2017 College Football National Championship game in Tampa in January. Info and qualifying coming soon. That's from Toledo sports leader ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Any updated stuff, Jim, I need to know on that?
Outside of the fact that we are already qualifying people daily here on these airwaves, nope, you pretty much covered it.
Good stuff, Jim. TAS Electronics update coming up, a little traffic right around the corner as well. Brought to you by SuperFitnessToledo.com. This show driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Going traffic jams. It's the Drive Time Show on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Drive Time, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We talked some Ohio State Buckeyes. We talked, a little bit of the, just touched on the Wings. They've won four straight. Lions, I mean, what are we, and again, George Costanza's opposite world here. Lions are finding a way to win, and the Ohio State Buckeyes finding a way to lose. So something not quite right here. Exciting times in this area, no doubt about it. The Cleveland Indians taking on the Chicago Cubs. Game one tomorrow. The Cubs in Cleveland. Also the same night, the Cavs are raising their championship banners to the rafters over, again, at Quicken Loans Arena. How about this? The last time the Indians won it, 1948, gas was 26 cents a gallon. And the last time the Cubs won it, in 1908, Henry Ford was introducing the Model T. I don't think Craig Muter was around for either of those events, but always glad to have him join this event. Of course, he is the Chief Communications Officer for the National Baseball Museum, a.k.a. The Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Hello, Craig. How are you?
Around in 1948, despite what other people may say. Let's put it that way.
Very, very good. Hey, thanks for taking the time. We know it's a busy time of the year for you. I guess that leads to my first question. What's your plans during this get-together between Cleveland and Chicago? Will the Hall of Fame be represented in both venues, Cleveland and Chicago?
Absolutely. I will not be there. I was at the ALCS here, so I'm catching up on my own time here and on my honey-do list. But yes, we will be there documenting it, and it's going to be a fun one. You think about it, this is history right here. I mean, this is a matchup that really hell must have frozen over, because I think both fans and teams are like, this is impossible. I can't believe this is happening. At least the Indians fans have seen a World Series in recent memory, in the last, 20 years or so. With Cubs fans, they have not. So this is something that it really is just special, and we're going to be there.
Hey, tell me about that. I mean, take us a little, I pardon the pun here, Craig, a little inside baseball here. When you attend the ALCS and when other representatives from Cooperstown attend a World Series matchup, listen, I know you want to be represented, but tell me what the official duty is there. Are you procuring items for the museum? Is that the main reason you go?
Well, that's part of it. For my part of it, I'm actually helping out the American League. I'm working on game notes for the American League, so it's a lot of fun. You're doing historical research and saying, hey, you know, Andrew Miller, this is the first time that someone struck out five batters in an inning in two-thirds since 2005. You know, notes like that that we come up with the media. So it's a lot of fun for a guy who loves baseball history. But, of course, we're looking at artifacts and seeing how we can document these events.
You know, I was a little surprised today, and listen, you guys have had your issues with gaming, I'll put it this way, over the years, but I was surprised reading today what a heavy favorite the Chicago Cubs are in this thing from the guys out in the state of Nevada that handicap these type of things. Are you surprised they're that heavy of a favorite?
I mean, the Cubs have been the prohibitive favorite since the start of the season, so I guess I'm not all that shocked because that appears to be what people think is going to happen and have thought since March pretty much what is going to happen. However, that's why they play it on the field, and I don't think the Indians, you know, especially after Carlos Carrasco went down, I don't think any Indians fans really thought, hey, this is our year and everything's breaking our way. But when you look at what's happened since then, you can really make a case for that this is their year. So I don't think you go into that series thinking, oh, this is going to be a wipeout, because the Indians dispatched two pretty good teams in the AL playoffs. Boston, you're not going to find a better lineup than Boston anywhere, period. And the Indians shut them down. Toronto is a very well-rounded team. This is a team that has four very, very good starting pitchers and a good closer, and the Indians dispatched them. So I don't think the Indians are going to be overwhelmed or, you know, panicked about this. But when you get to Chicago, it's going to be a madhouse there at Wrigley Field. So you're going to have to be in control and, you know, not let it get away from you.
Craig, you just mentioned something, and I had it written down here. It was kind of towards the bottom of my list to ask you here, but you just mentioned Wrigley Field and, of course, the Indians, their home Progressive Field. Anything in the historical data about the ballparks besides, you know, not hosting a World Series, the Indians 97, 45 for the Cubs, anything stand out to you? You love the game. You're always got something cooking up there that the venues stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they're both such good parks. You know, walking up to what I still call Jacobs Field, but is now Progressive Field, walking up there last week, it's aged so well and they've done so much with it. I love that park. And Wrigley, you know, what can you say about it? This is where, you know, this is almost the cradle of baseball, you know, when you're looking at it from a professional standpoint. There was a point there in the NLCS where Clayton Kershaw in game six, he ducked down into the tunnel for some reason. And he literally had to duck. You know, the opening was like 5 feet, you know, wide, 5 feet high, and Clayton Kershaw had to duck. And it reminds you just how old this park is and when it was built. You're going to see, I remember in 84. In 84, when the Cubs won the division for the first time and they played the Padres in the NLCS and the first two games were at Wrigley. That place was shaking. You really thought it was going to come apart. It is going to be just like that in game three and four. I guarantee it. And that's what the Indians are going to have to face. They're going to have to deal with that because it's really easy to get overwhelmed in an environment like that. You got to slow it down and say, look, it's just baseball. We've done this before. We're going to do it again.
You know what, Craig? It's on my bucket list, and I've been so fortunate in my career. I've called a hockey game, the play-by-play from the Forum in Montreal. I've called a playoff game from Old Maple Leaf Gardens, Chicago Stadium. I closed down. I did the last regular season hockey game from the Boston Garden when I was doing play-by-play for the Devils. I've been to Fenway Park. I've been to a lot of great stadiums, a lot of great places. On my bucket list, someday I got to get over to Wrigley Field as well. Hey, the other thing that was written, and maybe you can tie history into this before I let you go, you know, looking at the starting rotations, of course, with, you know, Chicago, Arrieta, and Hendricks was, boy, he was outstanding, and Lackey, and, of course, Arrieta, Hendricks, Lackey, and Lester, who goes tomorrow. And just, I mean, thinking out loud here with Kluber going for the Cleveland Indians, How big of a factor is, in your experience over the years, game one, and in Cleveland's situation with their banged up starting rotation, it would seem to me paramount that they win the first game. Not necessary, but, you know, certainly paramount, I would think.
I think in some cases, though, Mike, that can be overstated. And not that you don't want to win, because clearly you want to win. But when you start looking at things like that, sometimes baseball, it's such a neat sport in the sense that you win in ways you don't expect it. And so I'm not saying that the Indians aren't going to try to win game one, because they want to win game one with Kluber. That's for sure. They're ace. But I also think that there are different ways to win, and they showed it during the ALCS with Miller. You know, if they got the lead, it was just lights out. You couldn't score on this guy. And I think that's, you know, they're going to look at it like, hey, we're going to approach this like it's any other game, and this is how we're going to deal with it. And I remember, and Tigers fans will remember this, 06, when the Tigers played the Cardinals in the World Series, and a guy named Alex Reyes started game one for the Cardinals. And everybody thought, oh, this is over. The Tigers are going to pound him, and they didn't. And Reyes pitched the best game of his career by far. He was out of baseball in 3 or 4 years. But that night, he had it. And that's what tends to happen, I think, with World Series winners. You have these moments that you don't expect from guys that you don't see it coming. Now that may happen to the Cubs, too. They may have that also. But I just think that we're in for something like that, because usually that's what happens.
Well, you understand now, and he's a good player, Starlin Castro going to the Yankees, because Javier Baez has just been absolutely outstanding for the Chicago Cubs. Hey, thanks for coming on. Who do I make the check out to, Craig, for the Alan Trammell and the Hall of Fame Foundation?
I know we'll be talking about this, and it'll probably be next year, Mike, because I don't know if you saw the ballot that came out. Trammell is probably going to be considered next year based on how he spent most of his career in that era from 1970 to 87. I know we'll be talking about that coming up in a few times. And hey, it's almost election season. When the World Series ends, we start thinking about the next year. I can't wait.
You're the best, Craig. Thanks for coming on at a busy time of the year. Appreciate it. We'll talk about Cooperstown and folks getting over there, our next trip with you. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
Craig Muter, Hall of Fame. That's the National Baseball Museum, a.k.a. the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. All right, everybody, this is Drive Time. My name's Mike Miller. Glad to have you on board. This is ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. How about this? Come and see the Low Payment King today, Ernie, the great sales associates. How about this one? A 2016 Dodge Journey RT. Lease that for $199 a month. That's a 36-month lease. Get up here today or visit MonroeSuperstore.com. Get out to Forest View Lanes, everybody, too. A lot of activities out there. Visit ForestViewLanes.com. Bowling, one thing, but all the other great things, the simulators and golf, a lot of activities going on. Go say hi to my good friend Rich Kenny. They got a great kitchen out there, a new chef. Service is great. Turned into one of my favorite spots. Back to close it out after this, and probably a programming update with Jim Cushlam. This is Drive Time, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Steering wheel and turn up the dial. It's Drive Time on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. My name is Mike Miller. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Good show tonight. Enjoyed it. Enjoyed every minute of it tonight. First things first, special thanks to Nick Piotrowicz. Nick Toledo Blade was over in State College. He had at University Park. I got to Google that. I'm not sure exactly. I'm sure there's a couple little, for the lack of a better term, boroughs or areas there that have different zip codes and mailing addresses as well. Special thanks to Nick. Still sour about this non-pass interference call. I'm glad Urban's not making a deal out of it. Man, as an official, you'd love to get a call on Monday from the office saying, hey, Jim, hey, Mike, hey, Tom, hey, Bill. Gutsy call on that pass interference, but it was the right call. So don't take me wrong. This isn't sour grapes, maybe a little. Boy, is it official. You want to make when the game, when there's more on the line, when the Jim officiates. I officiated for years. That's why you're an official, to make the correct call at the big moment. They blew one there. Don't care what anybody says. The broadcasters, Chris Fowler, I think, was doing the game for ABC. Papers didn't make a lot out of it, but I did. From an official standpoint, man, oh, man. I'm not happy about that. But anyways, thanks to Nick for coming on, and also Craig Muter from the Baseball Hall of Fame, National Baseball Museum, for joining us here tonight on Drive Time. We'll do it again tomorrow right here for the Superstore. Hey, Jim, how about some programming updates here? Listen, I know we're home of the World Series coming up. Tell me about that, and what do we got going on tonight?
Absolutely. Well, first tonight, as soon as you're done here in a couple minutes, Mike, we'll have a Buckeye Roundtable to review that game, that call, and so much more from 6 to 8. And then that'll lead us, of course, right into Monday Night Football, Houston at Denver, courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. And then, as you mentioned, yes, we are Toledo's exclusive home of the 2016 World Series, so we'll have all the games for you. We'll join for the first pitch tomorrow because Bill Clark still has the High School Football Forum on the kids. We enter Week 10. That's 7 to 8, and then we'll go right to the World Series coverage beginning at 7, then on Wednesday.
All right, good stuff, Jim. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Right back here tomorrow with the guest of the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Glad to have you on board. All right, everybody. Drive Time, another edition in the books. Talk to you tomorrow at 5. Good night, everybody. Be careful.